The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So the, in the first 8 steps to mindfulness of breathing, those 8 are divided into four steps each. And there's a parallel quality to each of those 4 steps. That is, the first part has to do with, the first 3 steps have to do with just experiencing something, just being present or in experiencing something particular. And then the fourth step is to tranquilize or calm or relax what you become aware of, settle it. So the first 4 steps have to do with the body. So becoming aware of the body, first through the breathing, just becoming aware of breathing the way it is, and then calming the breath. Then becoming aware of the way the body is, the physical tension and holding and activity of the body. And then as you become more fully aware of the body, then as you breathe, you can begin to soften and relax the body. In the second tetrad now, 5, 6, 7, and 8, the idea is first is to experience joy and happiness, joy and delight, or joy and pleasure in meditation. So as meditation deepens, sooner or later people tend to feel some kind of joy. And it's fine to experience that and allow that to happen. So there's a whole art to letting that joy and happiness bubble up. And then the seventh step is to become aware of what's called the mental formation, the mental activity, the whole thing that... all the activity that goes on within the mind, the way that the mind is shaped by what's happening, and the way that the mind shapes what's happening. So by that I mean that perhaps you might be aversive to the blowers, and so that aversion then conditions, shapes, influences the quality of your thinking, the quality of your mind. It gets tight or constricted or something. Or it might be that the mind is tight. And so that conditions how your breathing is, affects your breathing. Breathing gets tight. It's kind of a reciprocal relationship, but it's a conditioning relationship, a shaping relationship. I don't know what other words there are for that. And so we start noticing how the mind, the mental conditions, the mental activity, what's going on. And then with the help of the breathing, then the 8th step is to calm the mental activity. Sometimes if you pay attention to your mind, you feel the mental activity is quite energetic, really busy. Sometimes you feel it's really, really calm and settled to begin with. But here, you're given permission to not just be aware of things, but also to relax it, to settle it. And that has to be done with wisdom. And because it's so easy to try to change your experience without the proper wisdom, many Vipassana teachers will emphasize, don't do anything about your experience, just know it, just be aware of it. Because we tend to kind of get manipulative, and meditation becomes an engineering feat. And then we're striving, and then things don't change fast enough, we're disappointed, and we get impatient, and all this extra stuff happens. But if we can be wise enough not to let all this extra reactivity happen, then help calm the reactivity of the mind, help calm the activity of the mind, calm the way the mind is conditioned and shaped and built up. And the two main things I was emphasizing during this meditation was the thinking. Thinking is an activity of the mind. And it's very interesting over the course of a day and a week or a lifetime is to notice the changes and shifts in not what we think about, but how we think. The intensity of it, the softness of it, you know, all these different qualities that go along with thinking. Thinking is not an isolated phenomenon. You know, it's not disembodied words that float through the mind with no other connection. Those words have tentacles that go out and touch our body, our emotions and volitions and all kinds of things. So the one was the thinking, and the second was that part of mental activity, reactivity, that has to do with liking and disliking, having preferences. So something happens and we don't want that. We're impatient, we don't like it, we want to go away, or we want something, we like it, that's great. The sound of the blower went off, and it got pretty quiet. But this is much better, it's kind of a sense of relief. I like that. That's really good. I really prefer that. So there can be preferences, you know, for or against things. But to feel that as a mental activity, it's not a disembodied, innate, effortless phenomenon of the mind that just kind of is there. Liking and disliking is an activity, it's a doing, it's a movement of the mind that goes on. So to become aware of that, see what how that works. And then and developing the art of kind of settling that, relaxing it. So that's kind of a little overview and introduction to this. We'll go into it more this afternoon, but I'd like to hear from you now. What happened to you as you followed that instructions? What happened to you as you kind of turned and looked at thinking itself? What happened to your thinking? What did you discover about your thinking? What could you notice about your thinking that was different than the content of what you're thinking about? And what happened? Were you able to kind of relax or tranquilize, calm the thinking muscle, the thinking activity? So I'm curious. Someone would like to share a little bit. Yes. And if you could use the mic, we appreciate it, because some people can't hear otherwise. On the bottom, there's a switch.
I've noticed this in the past. Whenever I pay attention to my thinking, kind of what you were referring to earlier, it seems like it's shy, and it just scatters away. And that's what happens. And then I find that maybe I have a lot of thoughts, but it's kind of scattered. I'm not really sure. But then it feels forced afterwards.
What feels forced?
It feels like I'm generating thoughts just so I can see the thoughts.
Oh, yeah. You don't need to do that.
Yeah. I don't know.
You can just hang out.
Can you
and
comment
film.
On that?
So in the sense, I don't know what you mean by scattered, but if the sense that the thinking gets fragmented and a lot of small thoughts kind of all over the map?
Yeah, once I shift my attention to pay attention to it, it just seems like they run away.
So the mind is silent then?
Yeah.
Oh, so then appreciate that, enjoy that. If there's not a lot of involvement with thinking, then generally if you bring attention to it, they fade away. And the reason why they don't fade away is because we're involved with them. I make a distinction between thinking and thoughting. The mind naturally thoughts. That's what the mind does. It's a thoughts machine and naturally thoughts. But the mind doesn't have to think, even though it has to thought. And the difference is that thinking has to do when you have a thought and you latch onto it, or you get involved in it, or you get involved in associated thinking. So it's like an ongoing thing. And so thinking only persists if we're involved in it. Some way. It can be a very subtle involvement. And so if you're not that involved, and you shift the energy of attention away from, you know, just to look at it, that's enough to kind of take the fuel away and they dissipate sometimes. And now if you're much more involved, then it won't go away that easily and you can just sit there and watch. You know, if your boss just fired you and you sit down to meditate, chances are that those thoughts won't just go and disappear like that. But you know, they'll come through quite strongly, and you sit back and go, watch. Wow, that's intense. So there's two things you could do. One is that you could, I think, just go back to your breathing at that point and wait till the next thinking comes up. Just be alert enough to notice it, and then turn your attention back to thinking. But the other thing you can do is when the thoughts fade away, there's a kind of a sense of silence or spaciousness that replaces it. And then just linger, hang in that open, cavernous spaciousness or whatever. And just sense and feel that. Be with that and kind of explore that a little bit, the boundaries of it, the sense of it, the texture of it. And until new thoughts bubble up. And some people can have the sense sometimes of kind of getting a sense of the place somehow, the place where the thinking arises. And you're kind of like a cat at the mouse hole. And you're just going to stay there and stay at that mouse hole and watch. when that little thought kind of pokes its head. And one of the really interesting things that can happen when your mind is pretty concentrated, pretty settled, is you get a sense that some kind of thought is about to happen. Like some people report like it's like a bubble coming up in their mind. It's a little bubble of thinking. It's about the thing. But because you're right there and so attentive to right at the beginning of it, it fades away. And you'll never know what that thought was going to be about. It's like you see it coming before you know the content. And so that's very interesting about the relationship between the conscious mind and thinking and what goes on consciously and what happens kind of non-consciously. But the fact that you can have a thought, your mind can have a thought, seemingly have a thought, constructing a thought outside of conscious awareness. And then it starts coming into consciousness and then it fades away and you never know. That could have been the best thought of my life. No. And meditation ruined it.
Thank you.
Thank you. You can pass the mic.
Yes. Just something real quick. I noticed that when you led us through the thinking process, I was watching my thoughts and I thought, this is working pretty good, and flattening out, finding a sense of ease, and I thought, it's working pretty good. And then what you just brought up, I got stuck on something. And why I'm here is what happened is I caught myself, I held my breath. So I stopped breathing. And that causes me a lot of problems. And so I just wondered what you had to say about that, because one of the things I wanted to find out today was when I stop breathing and why.
So you're saying generally in life you have this issue that you stop your breathing, you hold your breath.
I do.
So it's common enough that people do that for a variety of reasons.
I'm sure. Yes.
The most common thing a yoga teacher sometimes says is remember to breathe, because all these yogis are holding their breath when they... And so that's great that you want to look into that. That's
I'm on a mission.
Great. Why is it so important for you?
Because it gives me headaches.
And
a general sense of dis-ease.
Great. And so as you were doing the exercise today, following along, you follow along well, but then at some point it happened?
Yeah.
Near the end?
Yeah, I was sort of just right in the end, yes, actually. And I thought, there it is.
And so did you look at that then?
And I had that experience the young lady mentioned where my brain kind of scampered away.
So you mean you then looked at, for a moment, you looked at the holding.
Yeah, and my thoughts just kind of scattered.
Scattered away. What happened to your breathing?
I just mechanically thought, okay, breathe.
Oh, he says you got involved.
I started breathing.
I see. And so I think that, give yourself a lot of time to explore this phenomena. But when next time it happens, start looking around a little bit more widely to see what else is going on when you're holding your breath. And one of the things that might be useful to look at is what's going on emotionally.
I think so. I think it's going to be a step-by-step process,
So look on what's going on emotionally. And then eventually, if you do that for a while, then you can also look and see, are there any subtle beliefs that are somehow embedded in this, connected somehow with this holding? And then if you continue for a little longer, you can, and you get settled enough and get familiar with the territory, then you can notice it happening. And then you can say, as soon as you notice it happened, you can ask yourself, what happened just before? Just before you held your breath, what happened just before?
Mm-hmm.
And there might have been some thought, something happened that is really significant that you react to, catches you, that you do something with. And then there's the indirect approach to dealing with this, and that is not by understanding it, by getting into your breathing, developing a relaxed, easy breath, getting into your breath, enjoying your breathing. And as you get into more of enjoying your breathing more and more, it becomes kind of a counter-conditioning to the conditioning of holding, and it will ease you out of it.
That's what I've been thinking too. So as I practice on my own at home, that's my line of thinking is just keep practicing breathing, Adrian.
Yeah. It's great you want to do this, and there's a lot to explore. The other, one more thing, if I may, on this, is sometime when you find yourself holding your breath, hold it better. And then just kind of hang out and see, do a really good job and really hold it and see, you know, just, you know, don't, you know, even longer than you would naturally do, you know, hold it, just hold it. Just kind of get, so just so you can get to know it better.
Okay.
Say, okay, I see you, you're my friend, let me be friend. So be kind of like you're friends to it, you know, rather than aversive, like this is my big problem. Oh, here you are again.
Right.
Welcome. Hey, hang out, stay, I'll help you stay for a while.
Okay, great idea. Thank you. Thank you very much.
So when you mentioned how watching the thoughts bubble up and maybe they'll, you know, if you see them, you'll miss out on the thought.
Missed out on the fun? So what you said, miss out on the fun?
Miss out on the thought or
oh, the thought.
Know what that thought
oh, I see.
Was about. I don't know I had that attitude, but I noticed that some thoughts, I can see the bubble arising as like an image or something, or maybe a word. But I've noticed then oftentimes if I'm interested in the thought, if I like there's some emotional charge to it, like several times I've pictures of people I work with arose, and then I have some issues going on at work, so then I kind of went with it. And then it just sort of blew up this big, you know, scenario, and I was getting angry and everything. I think, you know, that part of it was the thinking part. I think the thoughting part was the bubbling.
Yeah. So you got involved in the bubble.
Yeah.
And then
I, you know, realized at a point when I disconnected from it, I could still feel, you know, the residual tension in my chest and all that was still present. It didn't go away as easily.
And so the one of the so as thinking goes on and we're investigating the whole phenomenon of thinking, the activity of thinking, the whole kind of composite event of thinking, one of the interesting aspects can be interest. And sometimes interest is not noticed, and sometimes it's important to notice the interest. And then if there's more than interest, but can you dive in? You know, then it's very interesting to start exploring and feeling what that sense of being grabbing or being intensely engaged feels like. Don't say it's bad. Just say, okay, well, now I get to study what it's like, what it feels like viscerally, what it feels like mentally to kind of be so caught up in this. So what does it feel like physically, emotionally, what's going on there? And then at a time when you're not caught by your thoughts, really get into feeling what that's like and get a sense of the contrast between the two. And getting a sense of the contrast between the two ways is very, very informative and very helpful in what's going on. So it's all just good stuff to be pay attention to. So we've got, you know, if you do get caught, just say, great. Now I get to study what caughtness feels like. And then the thing for the interest as well, there's other phenomena that happens in meditation or in life, but let's say in meditation, that some people are disturbed by or troubled by or something that persists over time. And they're wondering why it persists. And then finally they notice that they're interested in it. And when they note the interest, when they bring their attention, feel, oh, this is what interest is like, and they've dropped the interest, then that phenomena stops. Because sometimes it's the interest which fuels it. There's a subtle clinging sometimes in interest. And now if you come to meditation with a relatively active and coarse mind and distracted mind, then we often say, you should get interested. You know what's going on, but at some point when the mind is settled enough, even interest is too much. You still need to be present. Can I see your hand, Mary? All the way. Maybe one more, but one more flip. There's a middle.
There you go. Okay. What you said, I think I didn't have the experience today, but prior to the New Year's retreat, and then the New Year's retreat is a sort of an expanded version of that experience. And after getting really calm and looking back on how much I was suffering with thoughts. I'm at the point now where when you said think today, my reaction was no, thank you. I'm not going there. And I thought, well, that's cool, but I think there's actually aversion in that too.
Yeah, sounds like it.
So I don't know how to work with that.
Well, you know, I think you know the generic instruction.
Did I what?
I think you know the generic instruction.
Be with it.
Yeah. You know, study that phenomena. Study the aversion. Get to know it better.
Yeah.
Anything you don't like, anything you want to get rid of, which sometimes is appropriate. I mean, Buddhism is helping you become free of suffering. Anytime you want to become free of something, hopefully your first stance, your first approach, is try to understand it better.
Mm-hmm.
So don't be in a hurry. Mm-hmm. So now you notice something. It's great. And now your job is to get to know it better. And then once you know it a little bit better, somewhat better, then you can talk about maybe releasing it and relaxing it. So your job is to understand that aversion to thought. And it's unfortunate, you know. I think there's nothing inherently wrong with thinking. Thinking actually can be quite beautiful, and thinking can be deadly. And there's no need to have aversion. A lot of meditators will have aversion to their thinking, and that's to their detriment. And what I learned through meditation practice eventually was to be very friendly towards my thinking. So I have a pretty friendly relationship to them. And I try not to think when I meditate, but I don't think of thinking as my enemy or my problem.
I'm just, my last comment is I'm approaching thinking right now not as an enemy, but as something that needs to be, I need to be really careful.
Oh, that's good.
What I do with how
thinking
I allow it.
Some thinkings can be really dangerous, and some habits of mind can be really dangerous. So being cautious and careful and maybe, I don't know if I can afford to get into that train of thinking. Because if I do, the police will be here soon. And so then it's maybe it's wise to kind of stay away. That's a healthy kind of, not aversion, but a healthy pulling away. So, Rainbow.
That brings me to mind of the very first paragraph of the Dhammapada, and I wondered if you could say it to us.
The way I translated was, all experience is preceded by mind, made by mind, has mind as the chief, or led by mind. My mind's going blank, but is that the first part?
That's what I meant.
Recently I read someone who wanted to make the argument that the word mana, which I translated as mind, should be translated as thinking. So it's just kind of interesting. So all thinking, all experience is preceded by thinking, made by thinking.
Yeah. It's interesting to me when you spoke about it. Thank you.
Suffering follows a corrupted mind like the wheel follows the hoof of the ox. Over here. Ursula.
Because I've always, in my meditation, thought of thinking more as an enemy. And when you said, now we are going to think, and also with the preceding meditation where I felt really calm, I kind of welcomed what came up because it was now allowed. And I realized for the first time there's many things in my life, and I realized how I loved them all. And so this feeling, something comes up, I have to take care of my grandson. And it comes up, and it was just spacious and open. And I'm doing this, and I'm doing that, and everything came up. And then it would go away, and I'd have quiet for a while. And then the piano came up, and, oh, yes, the music is so beautiful. But then I realized my breathing was getting a little tight, and there was the old thought, you'll never get it all done.
Never get what?
You'll never get it all done. And so I thought, oh, let it just go, let it go. And so I sat with nothing for a while. And but I thought, am I just repressing this underlying anxiety of not having enough time for everything?
Well, who does?
I don't understand.
Who has time for everything?
I see. Yeah.
Great. That's lovely. And I don't know if this addresses your question or concern, but there can be beautiful, nice, healthy thoughts that can bubble up, and it's nice to make space for them, allow them to happen. But you also have to be very careful because they can also be very seductive. And the way in which the mind gets involved or latches on or kind of gets seduced by them is very quick and very, very tricky. And it can feel pleasant. On one hand, it can, on one side, it can be very pleasant. But and we don't notice. It can, the pleasantness of it, the beauty of it, or whatever, can camouflage the suffering that's in part of it as well. The tension, the suffering, and the tension involved in being interested, caught, you know. So beautiful piano thoughts. Oh, it's just a beautiful piece I'm going to play. I'm really going to play it. I'm really going to play that wonderful piece. I wonder, so beautiful, that piece. You know, the mind kind of gets caught up in. So it's very, very important to be very careful with things that are beautiful and nice in thinking as well. That we stay balanced, don't get too interested or caught up in it.
It actually didn't happen. It was very open, very easy, and it just came. So the thoughts came and went.
But at some point you started to contract.
Thinking, oh God, I got so much to do.
Yeah. So as soon as you had the thought, oh, I have so much to do, at that point you started to get attached to something. And it probably you got attached just before that.
Yes.
So can you see that attachment?
Yes.
Okay. And what do you do when you see? What can you do? Once you see it, the attachment, do you believe it?
I've been working actually for a few days now and trying to let go of the attachment. The attachment for me is that I'm kind of an addictive reader.
Yeah.
And I do everything quickly so I can get to my book. And I have been trying to let go. And every time the book came up, I thought, let go.
Good.
Try to be calmer with my other activities.
Good. So what I said at the beginning of the day was maybe relevant, that the only real book that you need to read is in here. So thank you.
When the thoughts came into my mind, they were very excited. It's almost like a big banner comes on with bright lights, and here's the thought. And sort of as we went along, that wasn't quite so bright, but it was, you know, really up.
So that's interesting. So what else did you notice about the brightness of it, the energy of it? What does it feel like in your body?
Oh, it felt wonderful. It was sort of like I'm really happy to be here, and it's like I haven't spent a lot of time looking at my thoughts, and it was like, you know, sort of like this is great. So it was sort of, you know, very positive.
And in that sense of positiveness of it, were you then attached to it?
No, I was sort of, well, I guess because I was looking. Wait, then it would fade away, and then I was waiting for the next one.
Waiting.
So in a way, yeah.
Because they were so good.
Yes.
You're waiting for, so that kind of waiting maybe is might also have an element of clinging or attachment to it. So you need to be, it's very important to include that as part of the mindfulness. If you don't include it, and it's operating kind of off stage, then you're in trouble. But if you say, "Oh, there's that attachment again," straight back. Maybe this is the last one, and then we'll stop for lunch.
Okay. Let's see if I can express this well. I guess the biggest challenge I have in going through the meditation is a thought will come up, and there'll be it's almost suffocating in the sense that it wants me to go there and engage with it. And on the one hand, I don't want to reject it. I don't want to push it away because I think there's something that's worth exploring. But I have a lot of difficulty looking at it kind of in a, I wouldn't say a detached way, but in an exploratory way. In other words, I get pulled into it,
okay,
to a point where I'm not objective about it.
Okay.
And that's a big challenge that I'm having with going through the meditation. How do I create that environment where I can look at something a little more objectively without getting so quickly drawn into it? And then, I there's a part of me that wants to push it away, but I know that's not a good idea.
Maybe.
But how do I engage with it in a constructive way?
Good question. One of the things you might consider is that I think it's very important for people to have quality time to think. But not in meditation. So there are certain issues and areas of life that are actually well warrant kind of thinking, brainstorming in the mind, free association in the mind, thinking, free association and exploration and creativity, mental creativity around it. So I like to do that, for example, when I go for walks. Sometimes when I drive, that's a time for it. A variety of different settings where I actually give my mind much more freedom to think, and thinking enriches my life and makes an important part of it. And I try not to, but because I have time in my day where I have that kind of activity, then I'm not so tempted to do that when I meditate. But if we're starved from some quality time with our own thoughts, then perhaps when you come to meditate, there's this big need, pressure for it. And so it's harder to let go of it. That's one thing you might consider. The other is that I find that my thinking is much more productive if I'm relaxed. So sometimes it's actually wise to, if you can, let go. Don't go there first. If you can, just go back to your breathing, stay with your breath, hang in there with your breathing, let go of your thoughts, let go and stay with your breath until the breathing helps you calm down. Or if you can't, then try to notice the physical qualities, physical tension or pressure that might be connected to the breathing, the thinking. So you're not getting involved in the content, just the physicality of it. And sometimes I feel pressure inside my brain, a tightness, sometimes around my forehead, sometimes my eyes, sometimes my jaw, different places. And then I find if I can relax a thinking muscle, then it's easier to go back and be with the breath. And then after some time, then I find it much more interesting or productive to pick up the thoughts and engage in, look at it more wisely, the whole phenomena. Because early on, I just kind of get caught in it. So you might want to wait. And then the third thing to say is what I said to Mary, is that the fact that you get so caught up in it that you can't explore it, perhaps what's going on is you don't understand what you need to explore. Sometimes people think they need to explore the trees instead of the whole forest, where the whole forest. And so rather than looking at the details in some sense of you thinking what's going on, perhaps you need to take that wide-angle lens, back up really far, and just become aware that here is a person just having a mental storm. There's a hurricane going on. Just to sense that, this is what caughtness is like. And I'm going to become aware of caught. I'm so caught, and I can hardly notice anything at all, but I can just, maybe if I just say the word caught quietly in my mind, caught, in a kind of rhythm. Every time I say caught, I have a chance to feel what that caughtness is like, to see it step out of its orbit. So hopefully those three things maybe are relevant for you. It's a good question. Is that okay? Okay, so I don't think any of you made comments about the liking and not liking part of it. Liking, disliking, what that was like, and preferences, and how you could have felt a sense of what it's like to look at that activity in the mind. It's possible none of you had likes and dislikes, so that wasn't relevant this morning. But maybe some other time we can talk about that a little bit, what your experience is of working with likes and dislikes, seeing how that activity of liking and disliking, what it feels like in the mind, the texture of it, the flavor of it, the tension, the physicality of it. And then is it possible what happens if you smooth that out, tranquilize that? So it's a little after 12. And let's take almost an hour. Hopefully, if we start, does it work if we start again at 1 o'clock? Is 55 minutes long enough, people? Anybody doesn't work because you didn't bring lunch or something and you need to go out? Okay, so so we'll start again at 1, and you're welcome to talk if you want during this time. If you don't want to talk, you can go into the conference room and eat there. And, you know, those several people can be in there, you know, eat there quietly. But if you want, this is a nice time to meet and talk to people. You can talk about this, what happened, more, or whatever. And people will bring out, people who know can bring out the tables out there and sit around the outer hall. So, thank you.